Exploring the power of connection in a world where loneliness is growing. Coming up on Peace Talks Radio.
I like to say placemaking is something that we all do, right? It's actually something that we do in our everyday lives and we don't even think about it. So the best way to put it is, it's the difference between a house and a home. It's that process that all people do of shaping their environment to make it more useful and more meaningful for them.
The design of spaces that invite strangers to become neighbors. This is Peace Talks Radio, the radio series and podcast on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. I'm Jessica Dickton. This is part two of our program on what it takes to create new friendships later in life. Correspondent Nadine Shaker talks to people who share their stories about reaching out across unfamiliar ground to create community. She interviews experts on the tips and tools to help foster connection and the design of spaces that invite strangers to become neighbors. First, we hear from journalist Jay Cockburn, who shares his personal journey from isolation to community, discovering how simple acts like chatting with neighbors on a porch or joining local teams can bridge divides even across political differences. Then we'll hear from Nate Storing of Project for Public Spaces, who explains thoughtful design of third places, welcoming environments that encourage people to gather, linger, and build friendships organically. These stories reveal how intentional community building, whether through everyday interactions or shared public spaces, can foster peace, belonging, and resilience. Here's Nadine Shaker.
Jay Cockburn is a Toronto-based journalist and podcast producer. Originally a BBC producer in London, he moved to Toronto in 2019.
I was supposed to be moving here with my partner of 4 years at the time. But at the last minute, just after I had got here and found us an apartment, she decided she was moving to Boston instead. I felt completely alone.
Jay came across a figure in the Toronto Foundation's 2023 report, Toronto Vital Signs, The Power of Us, that said that over a third of Toronto's adults say they feel lonely 3 or 4 days a week. In fact, Toronto was the loneliest major city in Canada. He himself was lonely, and this is why.
I had moved to London and struggled to make friends, and it honestly took me like 2 years before I had any friends, and moving to a completely different part of the city and being quite deliberate about changing my life to meet more people. So when I moved to Toronto and I found myself in this situation, once I stopped feeling like I was falling through the floor into an endless pit of despair, I did know what to do a little bit and know that I had to be proactive about meeting people.
Jay joined a bowling team, despite by his own admission, not being a big bowler. He also joined a kickball team and started chatting up neighbors on the porch of his 6-unit multiplex. But the fact that Torontonians were lonelier than ever before stuck with him and gave him an idea.
I was kind of just having coffee with the editor of The Green Line, a really great journalist called Anita Lee. We were just chatting about third spaces, places you can go to hang out that aren't where you work or where you live. And it's not my phrase, but I always think of the phrase, you always have to pay or pray to go to a third space. And we were chatting about like how there isn't anywhere you can go in Toronto where you don't have to pay or pray. Neither myself nor Anita are religious, but we started thinking like, what about the pray? Because that is a place that you can go to for free, that they want you to go to. And so I was kind of like, why don't I try going to church and seeing what that experience is like as a means of community building?
So going in, what did you expect and what did you find?
So I went in with a completely open mind because, you know, I'm 35 now. And as I've gotten older, I've started to see more value in religion. And I wasn't really sure how welcome I would be. I turned up at 8 a.m. before the Catholic Mass and I was welcomed by the priest in his Franciscan robes and stuff. And he explained how it was going to go and what to do. And I found it, the Catholic Mass, really calming. It was just so nice to be there on a Sunday with kind of the songs. And even if I don't necessarily believe what was being read from the Bible, the rhythm of the words being read.
I asked Jay about the sense of community at the Catholic Church.
I just remember seeing a lot of people from all different walks of life would say hi to each other as they walked in and out. And community building is about those organic interactions that happen whether you try to make them happen or not. Then I walked down the road and went to the United Church. And that was quite a different experience. The difference with the United Church was they had what was called fellowship time afterwards, where everyone went and met and had coffee and cake. And I could tell it was really important to a lot of the people that were there. People were having a great time. And I hadn't even got to sit down when people came up to me and were really eager to talk to me and get to know me and, yes, impress upon me how great the United Church was. And I remember asking them about the things the church does, and they had done a lot of really cool stuff. The building was attached to what used to be a school. That old school space is full of donations for refugees and immigrants or newcomers. They've been getting clothes and toys and bikes and kitchenware and anything that a newcomer might not have when they come to Canada, you know, a big coat. So I got shown around all this and it was incredible. There was so much stuff. And so I asked about the kind of people that was picking these up, and they're largely people from Muslim countries at the moment. And so I asked, I was like, is the point to sort of show how great the United Church was? And the person I asked kind of scoffed and said, no, these people are Muslim. We're just helping them out. And I thought that was a really lovely piece of like altruism, but also it's creating the connections between mostly white Christian Canadians and newcomers who were mostly people of color and Muslim. And so I thought, you know, there's that little moment of connection you're creating with people who are new to your community, and you're welcoming them by saying, like, here is stuff you might need. It's like giving out that olive branch and saying, welcome to our community. Let's get along. Here's some stuff that could help you start your new life in Canada.
The way I'm hearing it is that you've connected with people at the United Church because you connected with their ideas or, you know, the underlying tenets of what they do in their faith.
You're listening to Peace Talks Radio. Correspondent Nadine Shaker is talking with Jake Cockburn about the challenge of finding community after moving to a new city.
Was there any point where you thought this could be my community? I could potentially see myself as less of an outsider in this community.
Much as they are open to everyone and they say, you don't need to believe in God to come to our church, it still wasn't quite for me. Mm-hmm. But I do think there was lots of things we could learn from them. And I don't know exactly how to put this into practice, but the idea of having those spaces where people turn up every week and having kind of organic interactions where it's not predicated on buying something or anything like that.
Or praying, like you said.
Or praying, yeah. Maybe it's sports, but we need public squares and places you'll bump into people in your community and just kind of be able to say hi. If you're not providing places for people to linger, then how are they going to have interactions? You know, like, we need more places for people to linger without putting up a sign that says no loitering. I think we should do more loitering. Everyone should loiter.
Yeah, I think it should be like organic lingering. But also the reason why I loved reading about it is that there is a shared commonality, even if it's praying. I think that needs to be factored in somehow. And how would you do that on a policy level, right? You need to bring people together who share something.
If you create a space that's for everyone, you also kind of create a space that's for no one in a way. And I think it's like totally fine for people to have their faith space and to find community that way.
Jay eventually makes friends, but not from church. Rather, from literally sitting on his building's porch and chatting up neighbors. Some of them became lifelong friends. In his journey to find community among his neighbors, another incredible thing happened. Something a lefty like himself would not think was even possible.
I think if you are talking to people and making friends with them, even if they're people that you would not get along with. My neighbor, my old upstairs neighbor, we could not be more different politically. And we got along just fine. In fact, we would hang out on her patio sometimes and like have a glass of wine. And she would try and rile me up with conservative talking points and I would have to kind of bat them away. So that's kind of like a good bridging there. It made my experience of living in that building much nicer. If that was a kind of peace between people who are wildly politically different that happened because we were able to make friends and realize that even if we disagree vehemently on how the country should be run, we can still chat and we can still respect each other, especially when we have to live like 12 feet from each other. So I think that is like really important.
Yeah, that's, you know, peacemaking at its core.
Jay's journey reminds us that even in moments of deep loneliness, reaching out to those nearby, neighbors, teammates, strangers, can transform isolation into connection and build bridges across difference.
How do we build public spaces that feel like they are made for us? Spaces that are designed to prompt those types of organic, meaningful interactions between people. Do these public spaces exist? And if they do, how can they foster deep connections and community building? Can they act as third spaces where friendships can actually be made? Project for Public Spaces is trying to create those types of places. By involving community stakeholders from the start and employing the concept of placemaking, which is making a place feel like home. I talk with Nate Storing more about this.
So my name is Nate Storing, and I am one of two co-executive directors at Project for Public Spaces.
And how did you come into this work?
It's been a long path, but I started out in the art world, actually, and started to feel frustrated by the ability of art to really grapple with real world issues and connect with the general public. And that led me down a long circuitous path to eventually doing a lot of work in cities and really trying to help connect the general public to issues of urban design, of urban planning and urban policy. And that's what led me here.
So Project for Public Spaces is really big on this concept of placemaking. What is placemaking?
I like to say placemaking is something that we all do, right? It's actually something that we do in our everyday lives and we don't even think about it. So the best way to put it is it's the difference between a house and a home. It's that process that all people do of shaping their environment to make it more useful and more meaningful for them. The problem is that when we look at public space, those spaces end up being so much more complicated than a house that you own or you live in. There are so many more stakeholders, so many jurisdictions, so many issues that come together in public space that it often requires a more intentional process to get back to that core idea of all of us being able to shape our places together. And so that's what Project for Public Spaces does, is we provide that facilitated process to invite a wide variety of stakeholders to come together to envision the future of their public spaces.
Is placemaking a new idea?
So placemaking has been around as an idea for quite a while. The word has actually been used since the 1800s. But I think in its current form of this idea of being a community-based process for improving our shared spaces.
And are those stakeholders people from the community?
Yeah, so we really take a broad idea of what a stakeholder is. Certainly includes residents of a neighborhood, for example, but also business owners or people who work there, fellow nonprofits that are operating in the area that maybe steward the space or are nearby and provide programming or those types of things. And certainly government agencies, libraries, anyone who could possibly have a connection to the space, whether as a user or as a contributor to the space.
One of the challenges that comes up consistently with people who are trying to make new friends is where do they go to actually make those friends? So why are public spaces the perfect third places, in your opinion?
It's a good question. I think it's interesting because public spaces can be amazing third places, and they can also be terrible third places. For example, Times Square, probably one of the most recognizable public spaces in the world. It's a terrible third place.
Yeah.
It's not designed that way, not used that way. And that's because you have people traveling from all around the world to come to that space. Hmm. And many of them will never come back. And so the public spaces that work best as third places are often the ones that are part of your normal routines. They're the places that might be very close to where you live, that you go to every day or a couple times a week and run into the same people again and again. So that could be your local park. I think a lot of folks who have children who are that age, that's one of the ways that they meet other parents, is that they have to play with their kids outdoors and they run into other caretakers there.
This is Peace Talks Radio. Correspondent Nadine Shaker is speaking with Nate Storing, co-executive director of Project for Public Spaces, about how the design of our shared environments can encourage strangers to connect. Back to their conversation.
So while there is some overlap, there are also differences between creating public spaces for people to go outside, spend time without having to spend money, and creating a public space that's specifically designed to foster friendships and deeper relationships. Are you trying to do one or the other or both?
Definitely both, because I think we have a sort of framework that we use when we're doing community engagement that is based around these four characteristics of public space that makes them used and well-loved. And that's uses and activities. You need things to do there. It's comfort and image. Do you feel welcome there? Do you feel like you can relax? Do you feel like it's clean and safe for you? It's access and linkages. Can you get there? How often can you get there? How easily? Once you are there, is it easy to get around? That kind of thing. And then finally, sociability, right? And so I think for us, that question of whether you're building social connections or feeling connected to your community, or it's a place where you like to go with people you already know, that's an important ingredient of creating that kind of successful space that also just feels good and functions well.
And I was wondering, in terms of design, are there specific design principles that just encourage people or strangers to interact with one another, maybe strike up a conversation? Is this something you intentionally do when you design a public space?
I come from a background in museums, and there's this great museum director and author named Nina Simon, who writes a lot about participatory museums. Mm-hmm. And one of the ideas that she has in there is this idea of the social object. And it's these objects that just prompt you to respond and prompt you to, you might call it a conversation piece, right? You look at it and either you're like, what the heck is that? Or, wow, what is that? Like, and one of the places I worked over the years was at the Chicago Architecture Center. And they had this giant model of the city of Chicago. And that was such a perfect social object, because the first thing that everyone does, whether they're born and raised in Chicago or they're visiting to Chicago, is they're like, oh, where's my house? Where's my hotel? Where was it that we were the other day? And they're all trying to find places that they recognize on the model. And it's, you can just watch total strangers interact with each other around that object. And similarly, here in New York City, there's a public space called Astor Place. And it has this sculpture in it that's called the Alamo, but most people just call it the Astor Place Cube. And it's this giant cube that's turned up on its side. But the secret of the Astor Place Cube is that if you push on it hard enough, it actually turns. And this is a similar thing where you will watch, if someone starts pushing it and everyone else can see how heavy it is, you'll often see people who do not know each other pushing the cube together and just having a sort of weird social interaction in public space. Yeah. And it may not turn into a friendship, but it still gives you that dose of, I connected with a human being. I felt connected to the broader community of New York or of Chicago. So I think those objects, those, we call it triangulation, the third point between two people that allows you to break down those social barriers, is a really valuable thing that you can add to public spaces to encourage that interaction.
Is there anything else that can serve as a community hub, maybe allowing the community to hold events or make it their own? Is this something you plan for when you create public spaces as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think generally speaking, the flexibility of the space is very important. And so one of the tools that we always love to use in our projects is movable chairs. And it sounds like such a basic thing, but the reason why movable chairs are so powerful is because it allows visitors to rearrange them into different patterns that support their use, right? Can make the same place be a spot where you can go have your lunch, where you can go have a conversation, where you can people watch, where you can put your feet up, where you can read, where you can rearrange all the chairs into space for an event, where you have rows of chairs, right? It just opens up all of the possibilities of use. Similarly, in order to have those chairs, you need a fairly like open, flexible area that isn't over-designed. I think sometimes there's a temptation to make a public space look really good from above, for example,
yeah,
like from an airplane or a satellite or a drone. And that doesn't matter on the ground. And actually, a big boring square might be exactly the thing that you need in order to keep it flexible for the community to use it both on an everyday basis, but also to be programmed by the manager of that space to have those community events like a concert.
And you mentioned earlier that residents or the community are involved in designing your public spaces as stakeholders. How does this process eventually help in creating a space where people actually do bond and find community? Does it impact one another at all to have the community come in and give their opinions about how they want their space to look? and then actually creating a communal space.
We often say that the process is part of the product, right? And that the very process of bringing the community together around this issue and solving the problem together, we often even have community members like go out in the actual space themselves, observe it using those four characteristics that I described earlier, and then come to their own conclusions about what's working and what's not, what ideas might help to improve the space, and talk to each other and work through what they think the path forward is. And just that process of observing it together, problem solving, coming to some solutions that are either maybe they're compromises that have some consensus around them, or maybe they're ideas that are idiosyncratic and just one person suggested it, but it's safe enough to try. And everyone else is willing to just say, let's give it a shot. Let's experiment. That whole process builds a lot of social connections often. And many of the people in the room may not know each other before this workshop, but now they have a place that they share together. So I do think that's a really important part of the placemaking process.
Can you give examples of how some of your projects have been utilized to bring the community together or perhaps serve as a community hub?
One of the projects that we worked on recently was in Arlington, Texas. And what our local partner was finding in Arlington, Texas was that they had all these new residents. And what they found was that something like 40% of them had pets. A lot of dogs suddenly flooding into downtown Arlington. And they didn't actually have anywhere to take those dogs. And that meant that, number one, there was sort of an unmet need, but also there was a lot of dog waste, let's say, on the sidewalks, in places that you don't want it. And so what we were able to do with them is actually just take the buffer area next to the local railroad and transform it into a dog park. So it was, before the project, it was just a space of lawn that really was part of the dividing line between downtown and the adjacent neighborhood. And we were able to make it a place that kind of connects those two spaces by making it a little more lively, and also meet a community need and create this space where new residents to the neighborhood can actually come together to meet a very basic need of their pets, but also hopefully meet each other and become part of the community.
I did want to ask if the public spaces you create allow for new populations to join in, for newcomers such as myself, would it be inviting for me?
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of ways for public spaces, and maybe more importantly, the organizations that steward public spaces to invite newcomers into that space and into the community. So just a couple examples. We did a conference a few years ago in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And one of the things that I loved about getting to know that city is that there was this sense of local pride. I can remember getting a tour of the city and literally our local partner would just pull people off the street and be like, tell this guy why Chattanooga is so great. And just strangers would tell me that how why they love Chattanooga. And so there was this sort of sense of belonging. Mm. And when I started digging below the surface, what I found was they actually have a lot of programs to support that sense of integration, not to make everyone the same, but to just feel that sense of belonging. And so one of them is called Chattanoobies, a program for newcomers to come together and get to know each other and also get to know the city. Actually, bringing newcomers together with each other is a really great opportunity because they already have something in common. And then inviting in other people who have lived there for a long time and going to places around the city that, you know, the hosting organization loves is a way to start to feel connected to the people and places in that community, as well as other people that are going through the same process. I thought that was such an impressive program and a great example of how you can invite newcomers into the community, but they're also doing it out in public spaces often or in other third places and that kind of thing.
You're listening to Nate Storing, co-executive director at Project for Public Spaces, talking about how we can create inclusive public spaces that prompt real connection and interaction between people. What does placemaking mean to you?
I think for me, it really comes back to that basic human function, need, ability that we all have to make meaning in the world, right? And not just meaning for ourselves, but shared meaning. I think that's the most powerful part. And particularly when we're working in public space, I think that's the power of it, is that it gives us a feeling of connection and purpose. The actual doing of it is about building that sense of connection and purpose. And we get a great public space at the end of the day, but I think the work is the part that really makes life worth living in a lot of ways, that collective act of doing things together and shaping our environment.
And I wanted to ask you if you could imagine a world where you create these beautiful public spaces that are able to foster meaning and friendship and community, how would the world look like in your eyes?
I think my vision for the future would be that all of our communities have the resources and the time and the ability to be involved in shaping the world around them together. And the fact is, that's not the case right now. It's those resources and opportunities are not evenly distributed. And so I think that we have a long way to go. And it's not just about money. It's not just about funding. It is also about creating the space for that kind of work. And I do think that could really contribute to resolving a lot of conflict or making room to have important conversations that go unsaid, or we get our opinions about it online, but to actually talk about it together in person in the spirit of problem solving something very concrete together. I think there could be a lot of value to peace in that. And in terms of inner peace, I think it goes back to that idea of providing purpose, right? And shared purpose, I think, is something that gives me a lot of peace, of just knowing that there are other people out there who are pushing in the same direction or see things the way that I do or experience things that I do, and that we can make a difference. We can change things, push things. I find peace in that.
I eventually did make a friend in the big city, a neighbor who has a kid close in age to mine. We met at a condo building event. After many false starts, awkward conversations with daycare moms and strangers in the park, and after seeking friendship in the strangest of places, like on a friendship app and at a pool party, I would say I still find it difficult to make friends. It does take time, energy, and a lot of courage. But once a connection is made, when you find a shared reality with someone, it is irreversible. At least now, learning about other people's experiences and hearing expert advice on friendship, I feel more equipped to navigate the treacherous terrain of friendship making.
That was Nadine Shaker for Peace Talks Radio. Nadine spoke with Nate Storing, co-executive director of Project for Public Spaces, as well as journalist Jake Cockburn. In part one, we heard tips from psychologist Dr. Maya Rosignac-Milon, a professor at IESE Business School at the University of Navarra in Barcelona. Nadine also spoke with social worker Melissa Garthwaite. That's it for this episode of Peace Talks Radio, exploring how friendship, especially during life's turning points, is not only an emotional lifeline, but also a building block of more peaceful communities. You can find out more about our guests at peacetalksradio.com. You'll find links to their work, a transcript of this episode, and more about creating inclusive, connection-friendly spaces at peacetalksradio.com. There's also a donate button where you can become a peace ambassador and help keep this nonprofit going into the future. Support comes from listeners like you, as well as the Albuquerque Community Foundation Ties Fund and KUNM at the University of New Mexico. Nola Daves-Moses is our executive director. Ali Adelman composed and performs our theme music. For correspondent Nadine Shaker, co-founders Paul Engels and Suzanne Kreider, I'm Jessica Tickton. Thanks so much for listening to and for supporting Peace Talks Radio.